So welcome everybody. Thank you for coming along to the Sport and Leisure History Seminar brought to you by the British Society of Sports History in association with the Institute of Historical Research, or the IHR. This evening we have a speaker who spoke to our conference last year when we were in Manchester, and he's from Manchester. It's Danny Orwin, or should I say Salford?
Very good distinction.
Yeah. Danny is an early career researcher and fashion film lecturer at Manchester Metropolitan University. And he's come to talk to us today about class and cricket clothing. So I'll hand over to you, Danny.
Thanks, Jeff. So yeah, and as Jeff mentioned there, being on Manchester Metropolitan University's early career researcher scheme, I'm being new to research relatively. I'm looking forward to any sort of feedback, advice, and just further discussion from the seminar. Thanks for inviting me to speak here. It's great opportunity for me to sort of share this research. And what I'm presenting today is an emerging research project that centres around the class connotations of cricket. I'm exploring this through the lens of its kit and starting to question how the sport is influenced by place. I'm mainly focusing on context in England and Northern England when discussing the development of the sport and its impacts on perception. At the minute, the project is currently in the stages of ethics committee process, so I think this will be the last time I present it at this stage moving forward, and hopefully next time anyone hears about this project, I would have done it by then. For anyone who was able to see my first presentation of this at the British Society of Sports History Conference, there's some updates and tweaks since then, but the project is largely at a similar stage. And what that takes... form of is presenting at the end a test interview with a Greater Manchester club cricket player, so that's at the grassroots level, which reflects on their relationship with their playing kit, the sport, and their club's relation to an urban location. And really using the opportunity for this, I'd love to receive any advice on the historical aspects of the project to help define the correct context for this moving forward. So if there's any feedback on methods before this project continues, that'd be really welcome. I'll take you through to the beginning stages of my first interest in this project, which was through the Locating Menswear project, which is an international fashion network led by Professor Andrew Groves and Dr. Joe Jenkinson. So as part of this project working group, I became attached to the Manchester workshops, which positioned Manchester with the cultural theme of leisure. So discussions in those workshops explored Manchester's culture of music and the strong associations of sport, and in particular football culture, that influences the fashion of the city. The prompt for workshops in November 2022 and January 2023 was to search through the Westminster Menswear Archive digital platform and choose a piece that was interesting. That was just the prompt. In particular, I was struck by the image of the Jeeves cricket jumper that you can see on the screen there. And that was informed by my own personal experience of playing cricket in Salford as a youngster, and in light of the workshop discussions on football culture that affects on Manchester menswear so heavily. And for me, it created an interesting question of where Manchester sits in the cultural consciousness as a cricketing location, as I would argue this is left out of the narrative broadly of the city. And from there, I think about aims of the project is to firstly look at the kit and start to look at reflect on new narratives of cricket, using that cricket kit as a semiotic sign and its connotations and how it communicates to people. From there, any links to class, and in particular, I'm interested in uncovering unheard narratives surrounding class identity in cricket. And then finally, place. So the urban locations of cricket in the cultural consciousness, and how does Greater Manchester fit into this? And broadly, I think, with cricket in terms of the cultural consciousness beyond the village green that we can associate so much. In terms of methods, it's important for me with mundane methods, the book Material Collections by Holmes and Hall. That's been an important influence on this pilot study. And Sophie Woodward discusses the use of material collections as a methodology to generate data around objects. So the methods explored when treating clothes or wardrobes as collections are verbal, so getting people to talk about it, visual, which is taking photographs or object maps, and also observational, so that could be videos of people interacting with the collection. And I've started to position the cricket kit bag as a collection, potential findings in personal connections between participants and their cricketers' kits. And with a background as a filmmaker, I'm applying a reflexive mode of documentary film practice. So that includes exploring my own role in creation and representation of the film. A theorist, Bill Nichols, states that this approach involves a self-awareness of the documentary maker's role and perspective in shaping the subject matter and the audience's interpretation of this. So that might include keeping my voice present with prompts or questions through the recording interview and the outcome, so the audience is aware of my presence. And really thinking about the garments and how we can sort of use sort of leisure garments, really, thinking about that Manchester workshop and Manchester as that theme of leisure. And elements of identity can be interpreted and projected through the wearing of certain garments. Nathan Joseph's Uniforms and Non-Uniforms states that the symbols of leisure clothing can announce respite from work, dedication to an activity, social mobility, or the expression of moods and identity. Further in that text, we see how leisure clothing can take on a temporal nature, with sports garments in particular indicating access to free time, and thus a wider association of the elite. Jennifer Craik, in Sports Uniforms to Sportswear, states that by the 1860s, the kind of wear we associate traditionally with cricket, white flannels, white shirts, team blazer, Aran-style knitted pullovers and cricket cap, was standardised and remained the convention for over a century. And today, the cricket kit can still be argued to be associated with a certain level of social status, despite efforts to make the sport more accessible. The garment can be seen as a symbol of tradition and exclusivity. And I'd start to argue this symbolism can be transformative for both the wearer and the viewer, rendering the garment itself as an agent of change in class distinction. Jennifer Craik also proposes that when change did happen in cricket kits, it was motivated by development of Kerry Packer's one-day cricket that sought to repackage the game in a shorter, more audience-friendly format that exploited televisual possibilities and broadcasting. The traditional cricketing outfit now contrasts with short-form cricket's brightly coloured pyjamas, some people were saying at the time, and instead of white, the new cricket kits outfits are often garish, emblazoned with stripes, sponsorship insignia, and you know, very colourful. And while function has some degree replaced to tradition, whites have been retained for test matches and at youth matches and grassroots club cricket as well. And I think, you know, for this next section, I'm going to talk about fashion context and representations of the cricket kit in fashion have also impacted understanding of the sport. So we have Austin Reed catering to the middle class, an image there, focusing on delayed gratification, promising a return to luxury. This notable advertisement series portrayed scenes of leisure like cricket matches, evoking an aspirational ideal. The Austin Reed campaign that you can see there depicted individuals at ease, suggesting the clothing's comfort and casual elegance. And a large contribution to this in a fashion context historically is the preppy or Ivy League styles. So that fashion style's strong associations with traditional conservative attire, typically worn by students at prestigious American universities like Harvard, Yale and Princeton. Those styles emerged in early to mid-20th century and characterised by those clean, classic aesthetic with emphasis on sophistication, privilege and academic achievement. And when it comes to cricket wear, preppy and Ivy League styles often intersect due to their shared roots in traditional Anglo-American influences. Cricket, a sport with that origin in England, is often associated with old world elegance in that refined look of preppy and Ivy League fashion. And I think its power in fashion also speaks beyond advertisement and commercial fashion, and it appears regularly in high fashion trends as well. So we can see some images here from the autumn winter catwalk for Burberry in 2020, and most recently at the Milan Fashion Week in the autumn winter 2023-24 range by Emporio Armani. And that preppy look is refreshed with this cricket sweater detail, with updated via slick hardware, a sleeve detailing, fully fashioned neckline and oversized silhouette. Cricket sweaters as part of heritage sports themes have been reworked into trend red looks. 2018 Zara and Lacoste both incorporate in them as key looks for their knitwear ranges. And then also, probably most strikingly here, was in high fashion, the Moncler Gone Blue in 2016 reinterpreted the iconic cricket uniform in a range of cutting edge silhouettes using a cricket white base, tricolour stripes, reinforced cricket pad and cables. And so we can start to see that use in high fashion, varsity and preppy looks has influenced the cricket garments in a cultural consciousness. And finally on this section, I thought it was interesting in terms of the hip-hop artist Tyler Crater as well, wearing cricket sweaters here. So there's a quote here that we've got: when Tyler the Creator wore a cricket sweater with a blazer, crop trousers and chunky loafers in Los Angeles last year, the rapper came across appealingly as a kooky art school kid trapped at the University of Oxford. And that's from the Wall Street Journal. But you can see how that all of a sudden the journalist there is starting to, that transformative effect that we talk about as with the garments starts to happen there with this hip-hop artist. And it's starting to, you know, research shows it's starting to really infiltrate American menswear circles. So New York labels such as Tom Brown or Rowing Blazers, as well as Ralph Lauren, still offering versions in this season's. And by incorporating, you know, these cricket sweaters, varsity jackets and other things into Tyler Crater's collections, he's subverting those traditional symbols of privilege and elitism, creating interesting questions, I think, about self-expression and cultural commentary. Now, in terms of class, the recent ICEC report stated that their view is that there's been little to no focus on removing deeply rooted class barriers in cricket. The report stated that representatives of the ECB appear to have recognised this themselves, albeit it seems surprisingly late in the day. And some of those barriers might include prohibitive cost of attending international matches. Most televised cricket is only available behind an expensive paywall. The huge over-representation of private school players on the talent pathway and in the professional game, all the significant costs associated with progressing through the pathway. The recent book, Different Class by Duncan Stone, argues that the values and structures of English cricket, often cloaked in amateurism, were intentionally designed to perpetuate class distinctions. In that book, by focusing on recreational cricket rather than the professional level, Stone exposes how these divisions were entrenched at every level of the game, leading to the development of distinct cricket cultures in different regions of England. The recent ICEC report, Holding Up a Mirror to Cricket, addresses also historical issues with elitism. So struggles have been waged between the rural and the urban, social classes, gentlemen and players, north and south, private and state educated, men and women, and between white colonisers and non-white peoples. From the same report, we find that in the late 18th century, the great aristocrats and gentlemen were threatening the vitality of the rural game by poaching the best players for urban matches, particularly for their new marrowbone club. Although the peasant and lower middle class game continued to be popular, by about 1815, the centre of gravity shifted decisively towards London and the emerging industrial cities in the English Midlands and the north. This north-south element in turn created a tension between geography and class, initiating a long-running battle with the aristocratic establishment at the MCEC. Within the book Cricket in the Community in England, 1800 to the present day by Peter Davis, the discussion of historical class barriers in the mid-19th century is raised. So I quote here, "Socially mixed teams occasionally played, and working class professionals were seen as playing alongside members of the social elite in certain matches." So we have a record of a match between Manchester and Sheffield featuring six gentlemen and five players from each side. Amateurism was a bastion of the wealthy and privileged, and the world of professionalism was inhabited by young men who needed money to earn a living. But emphasising this division belies the fact that at the level of playing the game, the relationship between amateurs and professionals was not as tense as one might suspect. But we can start to see that complex relationship between location and class in the emergence of the sport through to today's landscape, and I think particularly in those playing the sport. So again, back to that ICEC report. So we can see there in terms of the access to playing the modern game of cricket and has its barriers. So diversity of ethnic background has also decreased in the men's professional game over the last 30 years and has never been high in the women's game. And ICC found that the least affluent groups in the socioeconomic classification were least likely to play the sport. I've got a clip here from Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams, which is a 2022 BBC documentary. And we can see the reactions of a select northern urban male's view to the traditional cricket kit here. This is a short clip after these participants have had a practice session, but before they've played the proper competitive game, and we can see some of their early impressions of the sport.
To be honest, yeah, when we first started, it was alright, to be honest, because, like, we thought it was going to be full of posh people and stuff like that, but...
No, it's not for posh people, but I reckon the clothes are posh.
Yeah, they make you look posh. Like, they make you put all whites on and that, and some, like, polo white jumper, it's...
So we can start to see their first impressions, and we can follow this
everyone
on now.
The team shares Freddie's enthusiasm. enthusiasm for cricket.
Sorry. So we can start to see this now when they, just before they are starting their first proper match, and they're interacting with the whites for the first time as Freddie Flintoff, or Andrew Flintoff, is about to dish the kit out.
I'm worried. I'm just not worried.
There we go. And I think, you know, we can start to see some interesting themes come through from that clip. So there's obviously resistance to the traditional kit at first. So participants expressing strong resistance with comments like, I'm not wearing it, or it looks so posh. There's that peer influence where the young boys seem to be egging each other on or sort of fueling that reaction and being swayed by their peers. There seems to be a bit of a divide in the transcript, so some of them describing it as horrible or comparing it to something negatively like the 1940s, but then at the end start to joke and say we're shining as a quote. And you know, really you can start to see how the kit doesn't really align with their sense of identity or belonging, but they start to embrace it towards the end. And then interestingly for me, from a fashion background, is people adapting the garments, so still wearing their beanies or choosing to style it with, you know, putting the buttons up top. And, you know, having a sort of ownership around it, and that seems to be important for them when wearing the garment. So we have that complex interplay of resistance to tradition, identity, peer influence along those young males as they react to that kit. For my own project, seeking to gain further context, I recorded two interviews with Harry, who's a local cricketer in Salford, in Greater Manchester, who now organises informal matches in the local Peel Park area after an injury. Just a side note, he takes a lawnmower down to the local park and makes his own wicket just by mowing the grass. But importantly, he also runs a fashion label. So I thought this was an interesting opportunity to get insight from some of the fashion awareness, but also providing a context to understand the cricket jumper.
As a kid growing up, you would see cricket maybe in the same limelight as you'd see sort of like Wimbledon. Yeah, I definitely think the colour of the kit is what predominantly makes it like difficult for people, because, you know, objects themselves, do they have any, is there anything distinctive about an object that makes it look a certain way, or is it the connotations behind it? It's hard to say, really. I mean, in a society where everything is coloured, like, and then there's a white outfit, that obviously stands out. But then there's more than that, because it's the sort of details of the outfit, the fabrics, the fit, the jumper. I don't know, it's really hard to say. I think it is more to do with what people are preconditioned to know than the actual object itself.
So I thought that was, you know, starting off with an object analysis there, or object interview with Harry. And there was some,
I think as a kid,
some interesting themes going there. So his personal experience and perception of cricket, he aligned it more with Wimbledon, you know, with the white kit. And I think you can start to think about those, again, recurring themes of tradition there. He seemed to think that, you know, the colour of the kit stands out in a world full of colour, and that was his perception about the modern world as well. And then further on in the transcript, which I don't have time to show everybody, he'd start to talk about the cricket culture in Manchester and sort of diverse communities. And how you would not expect somebody to wear this as a sort of fashion garment or a streetwear garment compared to maybe the T20 kits or Manchester Originals kit from the 100, for instance, that you might see on the street a little bit more, and how those kind of things interplay really with social class. I've got the following video now is that object analysis, so that's really where Harry is really reacting to the garment itself and his perceptions when just being exposed to that and interacting with it. Let me just try and get the sound up for this one. Oh, 1 second, I've got it. I'll just rewind it. There we go.
The first thing that draws your attention is these like stripes on the front, and they're obviously like very detailed and intricate. And I think it sort of reminds you of like, I guess like my first thought would be like something grandma would be doing. Like, in a sort of old fashioned way. It really looks like handmade in a way. Most kids as well, like, would be used to like the England three lines in a very football way. The badge is very, it even looks a little bit posher than the football. But so even little details like that, I kind of like what's standing out. And again, this the shorts, especially the short sleeve, like a sort of vest or a short sleeve jumper. I mean, that to me just strikes you as something that's like very harsh. I don't know why, but it just does. But I'm the sort of person who would like revel in wearing something a bit like different. Like I'd still feel a bit nervous though about walking around.
There we go. And again, we get some themes from that short clip coming through, which is a perception of tradition and craftsmanship. And he said it looked almost handmade. There's a youthful perception to it in terms of wearing it out on the street and start to think about the actual Three Lions logo that's there in terms of in comparison with the football kit. Attention to detail, and then also that somehow that the vest element of it as well communicated some sort of social status or class. And then just to wrap up and the final section now is the interview that I conducted with a club cricketer, which is Simon, who grew up in Salford. He plays for Winton Cricket Club in the borough of Eccles. So, again, within the first interview, a video recorded Simon talking through his kit bag, his equipment, and just let him explain his decision-making or any connections that he has for each piece, really just to see what would happen once we start to engage with that connection. I'm able to talk over this one. And really, he discussed his cricket equipment, and the thing that interests me the most and was apparent is that he ranked his kit in importance unprompted. So as soon as he started getting his kit out, he picked his bat out first, which generally costs more and was selected before any other piece of equipment or kit. And his protective pads were shown last. Now, that might suggest some sort of inner hierarchy of kit and equipment that club cricketers might share. And the themes that he talked about really was how he wanted to make sure that there was the pricing point of it, where he sources it from eBay, but also making sure that the brands match up to his Kookaburra bat. So he was very interested in sort of getting the similar ones and going on eBay and finding those kind of things. Comfort and fit, obviously, in terms of for extended periods of play. Safety and protection, so he had a paramount concern there, so the need to wear helmets and protective gear to avoid injuries. He had a finger injury, which you can see there from a previous match at the time of the interview. And he mentioned about for junior players, considerations in terms of adjusting to the bulkiness of the cricket kit and potentially that being a barrier. But with this interview method, he remained focused on individual choices and practical experiences with the kit without delving into broader social implications related to the sport, which is something obviously I was keen to explore. So I followed this then with an audio interview with Simon, and this was sat at a bench next to the clubhouse at Winton. In the film I'm about to show, I've cut this with surrounding footage of the borough of Winton. Because within that interview and recorded footage, we start to see a locationality relationship between Simon, the kit, and the area. And I think for me, visualising and establishing the environment of the area is important because that's hard to distinguish by club grounds alone. You know, a local cricket club is quite an expansive space.
For it to be like, I think some kids probably would look at me, it's not very cool.
I think obviously once you're in it, it's just a normal, that's just what you wear, and that is just what it is. Obviously the game is moving on a lot now in terms of, I mean, even at a local level now we have 2020s and cup games which are all played in coloured kit, pink ball, you know, music on, so it's trying to change. And you've obviously got a lot of people that have always been involved in cricket who don't want it to change. You know, the 100 is probably the biggest example of it, where you speak to a lot of people in cricket and hate it. But I went to one last year and, you know, it was absolutely packed, full of kids. You know, the colour, the excitement, it's a bit something new, and it's just making it maybe a little bit more accessible. Obviously, Salford's quite a big area and there is a lot of clubs around here.
By the way, I always remember when I played for Clifton, this used to have a reputation of being like the roughest club.
I think it is, but is it? You've got obviously Worsley just literally 100 yards that way, which is a very nice area. And then the other side is Winston, which maybe isn't quite the friendliest area. So, yeah, it is kind of looked down on a little bit, which it is a different kind of setup there, which now I've probably played it. Out of the three leagues, probably what you would class as the rougher element of it. So I don't know what it says about me, but I think a lot of the base and the people from the club probably are from Winton itself. Obviously exceptions, but it is quite a down-to-earth sort of club. Not what you would picture a cricket club, probably, if you didn't play cricket. It's probably not. There is a massive gap in class and stuff in cricket, and I think it's good for lads to turn up and it not be necessarily really posh. Everyone's got to have the newest bat and, you know, battle with the parents who's got the best kit and who's having the most one-to-one lessons. And sometimes when we have teams come down here, or when I was at Warden, who maybe didn't want to come here because of the reputation, and but there probably is that view of cricket if you're not involved in it, what you think it is versus what it actually is.
So we can start to see there Simon's personal cricket experiences and talking about you know, his views on the look of it in comparison to maybe the 100, and about extra excitement or extra immersion for the viewer or an audience. He talks about shifting perceptions of the traditional type of cricket player, specifically around younger generations. He talks about how it might appear odd or uncool to outsiders, but the sort of colourful kit in T20 or the 100 introduce a more vibrant atmosphere. I was particularly interested in terms of how he used the 100 as well. I went to one, which was, you know, kind of interesting take on it. And then really just to wrap up, throughout that interview, I realised that locationality and object use is paramount in the ability to discuss and explore these themes with participants. And I think the ability to be at the club allowed Simon to reflect on its place and the role it played in the community. He was able to point at certain areas of the grounds to visualise activities such as training and social events, and creating that verbal picture. I think moving forward, I've got potential for trialling the interviews in club or sports hall changing rooms, maybe, to provide other opportunities in the object-led interviews. And sort of using the kit as a conversational lens, being further integrated in that process. And I'd like to think about a pre-interview questionnaire for preparation, or extending this to hosting group workshops with guided questions, and, you know, helping participants facilitate them bringing in their own kit and garments that they wear. The interview with Harry presented those other opportunities, so looking at the garments as objects and sort of the relationship with it beyond the functionality, which club cricketers, I think, naturally go to. And then final reflections I've made also centre on the scope of the participants moving forward, and potentially how to engage with the community on the cusp, the cricketing curious, and extending the workshops or the interviews to people involving cricket more casually through community organisations outside. So one potential for this that, you know, just candidly that I'd like to say is Manchester Active, which is an organisation which facilitates quick cricket, you know, a more accessible opportunity for people. And just to conclude, the big bonus for me presenting here today was to receive any advice on the historical aspects of this project to define the correct context for this moving forward, and hopefully shed further light on that complex relationship between the cricket kit, structure of the sport, and social class within Greater Manchester. Thanks for your time.